we've got a lot of ways that we present ourselves. And we pick ways to show ourselves to the world. Sometimes that's very intentional. Sometimes it's just the way that it happens. There's not much intentionality to it. But we pick the way that we, for the most part, want people to see us. What I want to suggest in the lesson tonight, in running the kind of the gamut of all these different ways that people present themselves, is that there's not necessarily something that's wrong with every single one of them, but by the time we reach the end of the lesson, hopefully what you'll see is that there is one that is indeed superior to every single one of them. So I want you to ask yourself the question, most of all, what do you want to be known as? How do you want to represent yourself to the world? If you had a statement to make, what would you say? A lot of people would begin here. Most of all, I am rich. Most of all, I am rich. Proverbs chapter 23, let's look in verses 4 and 5. Proverbs chapter 23, verses 4 and 5. Do not overwork to be rich. You know, don't work too hard for it. Because of your own understanding, cease. Will you set your eyes on that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings, and they fly away like an eagle toward heaven. I've known about that expression in Proverbs forever, but I consistently forget to bring it in front of you. I have a little bit before. But riches just fly away like an eagle. Don't overwork for it. We could look in Proverbs chapter 28, and we look in verses 19 and 20. Proverbs chapter 28, look in verses 19 and 20. So Proverbs 28, 19 and 20. He who tills his land will have plenty of bread. He who follows frivolity will have poverty enough. A faithful man will abound with blessings, but he who hastens to be rich will go unpunished. Will not go unpunished. So don't try to get rich quick. Don't overwork, don't try to get rich quick. And then, of course, Proverbs chapter 20, verse 10, it should go without saying, but it is part of the divine inspired record, so we will say it. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 10, diverse weights and diverse measures, they are both alike an abomination to the Lord. Down in verse 17, it's something very similar, which just means don't cheat to get more money. A lot of people would present themselves to the world as being rich. Maybe that goes through the avenue of status symbols with what they have, the clothes that they wear, or maybe the cars that they drive, the home that they have. But the fact is, we are given, good, solid instruction on what makes up and what should make up the core of every one of us. Is it wrong to be rich? Is it wrong to be wealthy? It's not. In fact, I will follow up Proverbs that we've just read by saying immediately, some of the finest Christians, some of the most faithful people that I have ever met have been children of God who have been rich, who have been wealthy. It is most definitely not an issue and not a problem. But why? Well, because those people have captured the essence. Those people have captured the core. I like the way that Peter put it. Sometimes we use 1 Peter chapter 3 in a different context. Sometimes it's about what we wear. Sometimes it's about the context of marriage. Let's look at it in the context of wealth tonight. So Proverbs, 1 Peter chapter 3, look in verse 3. Don't let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing gold, or putting on a fine apparel. So let's just kind of turn that a little bit. Let's not let it be any kind of signal of wealth or of riches. Instead, look at that essence. Look at that core. It's coming up in verse 4. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart with incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. And again, I would go to the fact that people who have a lot of possessions and who are faithful children of God have done that. Job chapter 1, verse 3. Job had a lot of possessions. Of course, they measured it differently back then. Job had a lot of possessions. Lost it all. At the end of the book, he ended up with double what he had in the first. He was wealthy in the first place, let alone what he had by the time the book ended. But what was he? He was a man who trusted God, and I mean he trusted God through everything. God blessed him. Abraham, you don't really see about Abraham, or Abraham's wealth isn't noted until you reach Genesis chapter 13. That's where he and Lot go to begin to divide the land up so they can have plenty of pasture land, pasture space for their different flocks and herds. But it says Abraham was a wealthy, wealthy man. But yet, what was he? He was one of the greatest, most remarkable men of faith that the Scriptures have ever presented to mankind. What made the difference? That inner essence, that inner core. With some, that inner essence and that inner core, it isn't there. They spiritually haven't found it. I hope that people will, but they haven't. But for the people who do find it, they have a marvelous wealth beyond just riches. Most of all, would you want people to know that you're rich? Or maybe, and this one I'll admit is close to it, most of all, I want people to know that I am successful. So maybe someone wants to accomplish something. Maybe they want to have a successful business. Of course, wealth and riches would come along with that. I know that's why these are fairly close to one another. But maybe someone wants to have a successful business, or maybe someone's in a corporation and they want to rise all the way to the top. Maybe someone's in a school district. And they want to rise all the way to the top because of the vast material gain that's involved. They want to be successful. That's what they aim for. That's what they shoot for. Is ambition wrong? No, ambition's not wrong. In fact, when you look, the little pieces that we have, and I hope that I'm interpreting the pieces accurately. Let's go to Luke chapter 5, verse 10. Luke chapter 5, let's look in verse 10. This might be something that normally you wouldn't have even thought of. So we'll put two passages together about something that's very, very similar. It's linked together. So Luke chapter 5, verse 10, it just says, "And so were also James and John, the sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon." What'd they have? They had a fishing business. And apparently it was a fairly decent one, because let's go to Mark chapter 1, verse 20. Mark chapter 1, verse 20. So Mark chapter 1, verse 20, "And immediately he called them. They left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired servants and went after him." Apparently, as Jesus called these fishermen, I think as a boy this idea, maybe it was more of a romantic notion, because I grew up fishing by either standing on the riverbank or putting on boots and walking down the middle of the river. That's just what we did in Tennessee, especially if we were catfishing. But this was an enterprise. And I mean, it has the appearance of a decent little enterprise. Or Lydia in Acts chapter 16, verse 14, remember what she did? She was a seller of purple. And just about every account that I've ever read said that this was probably a woman of means, a successful individual. Again, there's absolutely nothing wrong with ambition. But we have to remember, where do I truly want my heart to be? Let's go to Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, we're going to read this and make some comments, because some comments are necessary to kind of understand it in the appropriate setting. Because if you don't, it sounds like it's very, very dark. And that's not necessarily the point that Solomon is making. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, starting in verse 18. "Then I hated all of my labor in which I had toiled under the sun." Under the sun is a common expression in the book itself. It occurs over a dozen times. It indicates under the sun working, living, existing, toiling without the overlay of God in your life. So, the regular person out there, no attachment to God, no attachment to religion, just a normal person. They live their life under the sun. So let's keep going. Because I must leave it to the man who will come after me. Maybe it's children or it's grandparents. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool, yet he'll rule over all of my labor in which I toiled and which I have shown myself wise under the sun. This is also vanity. Therefore, I turned my heart and I despaired of all of the labor in which I had toiled under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, yet he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. For what has man for all of his labor, for all the striving of his heart with which he has toiled under the sun? For all his days are sorrowful and his work burdensome. Even in the night his heart takes no rest. This also is vanity. You know, some people, again, are very, very successful. And the wealth that they amass comes from that what little they had then growing exponentially. Some people just make a pretty steady amount throughout their lives, but they really know how to squirrel it away. And so by the time that death comes, these are wealthy people. But we don't know what is going to happen afterwards. And Solomon despised this. He despaired of life because of all of the work that he had done. He didn't know what was going to come later on. Ambition is good. Wealth is not necessarily bad, but there is something that's better. And Solomon actually, in the end of chapter 2, I personally think this is kind of a conclusion point for the first section of the book of Ecclesiastes. So when you look in verse 24, nothing is better for a man that he should eat and drink and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. For who can eat and who can have enjoyment more than I? God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who is good in his sight. But to the sinner he gives the work of gathering and collecting that he may give to him who is good before God. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. Does that mean spend the inheritance? No, that's not what it means. He's not talking about go ahead and blow all the inheritance and don't leave anything to anyone. That is not what he's talking about. But he is talking about don't forget to enjoy your life. It is your life. It is a blessing from God. You are earning the fruits of your labor. And yes, you will leave some of that fruit to someone else. But you have to remember that you don't know what they're going to do with it. You don't know if they're going to squander it. You don't know if they're going to take it and build even greater things for themselves. But you need to enjoy what you have. Have that essence, have that heart, have that knowledge, have that wisdom to live and do what is right. Most of all, am I successful? Is that what I want to present to the world? Maybe for some people, they're intelligent. Some people don't really get into amassing of wealth or amassing of knowledge, but intelligence, degrees, being the smartest person in the room, that is very, very important to them. So most of all, do I want to present the fact that I am intelligent? Well, again, I go back to the question. Is Kyle saying learning isn't good? No, I'm not saying that learning is good. Learning is real good. When we look in the New Testament, when we look in the Old Testament, we're seeing the fact learning is good. We started in Proverbs. Go back to Proverbs, except this time, start all the way back in Proverbs chapter 1. Proverbs chapter 1 begins establishing the fact that wisdom and knowledge, they are good. And the wisdom and knowledge in the book of Proverbs, remember, isn't just a spiritual wisdom and knowledge. When we started these Proverbs at the beginning of the lesson, we were actually reading Proverbs that were an earthly proverb. I mean, it's telling us how to deal earthly stuff. Didn't really bring in something spiritual. They were eminently practical. So start in Proverbs chapter 1, start in verse 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the wisdom and the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, equity, to give prudence to the simple and to the young man, knowledge and discretion, spiritual, yes, but physical too. Physical too. A wise man will hear and increase learning. A man of understanding will attain wise counsel. To understand a proverb and an enigma, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. So you kind of connect yourself with God, you immediately learn about the benefits of knowledge and wisdom and learning. We need to have a heart for ultimately learning the will of God. Because remember that learning the will of God should be the basis of everything else that we have. Now again, this isn't to say that intelligent people aren't good and they aren't useful in the kingdom of God. Nothing could be further from the truth. If you look at Daniel, run back to Daniel chapter 1, or actually run forward, run ahead to Daniel chapter 1 verse 17. We don't know how old Daniel was, but he couldn't have been very old because we know how old Daniel is by the time the book ends, or at least a decent guesstimate of how old Daniel is by the time the book ends. And when the book begins, can't be but just probably a teenager. Daniel chapter 1 verse 17, look at this. As for the four young men, so this was Daniel along with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. You could go into the New Testament with Paul. Acts chapter 22 and verse 3. It's been estimated, I could say guesstimated, that by the time Paul becomes a Christian, he's somewhere around 30 or 35. If that is the case, and it's close, as Paul is talking about his former life, specifically in Acts 22 verse 3, as he is growing up and all of this instruction, when would that instruction have been? Probably in his teens and in his 20s. These people were intelligent. But what were they used for? They were useful to the master. And again, none of these things so far that I've talked about, there's nothing inherently wrong in any of them. We just want to make sure that everything is used in the best possible way, ultimately for the master. But let's ask the question. Most of all, am I well known? Most of all, am I well known? So money or intelligence or possibly we could even say fame. So let's go to 1 Kings chapter 10 because we're going to talk about, I suppose, not just Solomon in the context of his wisdom, but also Solomon in the context of his knowledge. And that knowledge, of course, runs along with wisdom, which runs along or it produces pretty good fame. 1 Kings chapter 10 verse 1. Now when the king, when the queen of Sheba, you all know where the land of Palestine was, it was commonly thought that Sheba was down somewhere in the region of Ethiopia, so well south of the land of Palestine. And remember, you know, this was back when stuff wasn't just easily known like it is now. So someone, this queen, being living hundreds and hundreds of miles away from Solomon, knowing and hearing about what he was a lot bigger deal than it is now. 1 Kings chapter 10, verse 1. Now when the queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, she came to test him with hard questions. Look in verse 4. In verse 4, when the queen of Sheba had seen all of the wisdom of Solomon, the house that he had built, look in verse 6. She said to the king, "It was a true report which I heard in my own land about your words and your wisdom. However, I did not believe the words until I came and saw with my own eyes. And indeed, the half was not told me. Your wisdom and your prosperity exceed the fame of which I had heard." Which is pretty, pretty impressive. So there's a lot of people who want to be well known. And I would imagine that in 2024, we probably have the easiest, simplest way for people to be well known that we have ever had. This is something that particularly is a temptation for younger people. We can talk all about the kind of dangers that they could find on social media. Some of it's vulgar, some of it's, well, it just, again, it's a big, big gamut of stuff. All I want to talk about tonight is the temptation to value yourself by the number of people who like something, who share something, who comment on something. That kind of becomes the measure for what a person is. And guys, that's just not accurate. It's just not accurate at all. People can be manipulated. We could even say, and we can stand by, people can be talked into anything. What we need to realize is that we've got to be people of strength, and we have to be people of integrity. In what? Well, in spiritual things. Let that, again, be focused and be the focus of my existence, not wanting to please someone else. I like in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 13, of all of the passages in Corinthians, I like 1 Corinthians chapter 16 and verse 13, one of my favorite places. And again, it's just kind of an offhanded one, but here's what it says. Watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, be strong. Why is that pertinent? Just pick out two of those. It's a wonderful lesson, actually, if you do a lesson on just all of those little admonitions in 1 Corinthians 16, verse 13. Great lesson on one verse. Pick out two of them. Be brave and be strong. Be brave and be strong. Some versions say be courageous. And that's what you're going to have to be. Paul said in Galatians chapter 1, verse 10, he was not a people pleaser. Because if he pleased people, he couldn't be a pleaser of God. The way he put it in Galatians chapter 1, verse 10, is he couldn't be a servant of God. So you had the choice of pleasing God or pleasing people. And you think it's an easy choice. The choice itself is admittedly easy. The problem is the consequences. Consequences are tough. Consequences are really tough on someone who's young. So what would I say to them? You be brave and you be strong. You realize where that core, where your essence needs to be. And know that you're going to pay some consequences to be a spiritual person. So what do? You be brave, you be strong. There's all kinds of people. I mean, there's example after example. Let me read you one of them. Acts chapter 12. In Acts chapter 12, this actually occurs in multiple places in the book of Acts. Acts chapter 12, starting in verse 1 with me. Now about the time Herod the king stretched out his hand to harass some from the church, then he killed James, the brother of John, with the sword. And because he saw that pleased the Jews, he proceeded further to seize Peter also. Likely would have killed him had God not miraculously released him from the prison. Again, that's at least in a couple of other places where these rulers, because it was pleasing people, went out and was doing detriment to the cause of Jesus Christ. Now you think about that and you just flip it. You're going to be a person of integrity, and you're going to be a person of spirituality, and you're going to be a person of righteousness. You're going to be a person who is brave and who is strong. You will pay the consequences. You will. There's a lot of people who can help you with that, but you'll pay the consequences. Are the consequences worth it? If you believe the Bible, they are. If you believe the Bible, they are. What will you be known for? Will it be for just simply the fact that you're well known? Well, let's think about another one. Most of all, I am beautiful. Most of all, I am beautiful. Let's go to Genesis chapter 12. Genesis chapter 12, we're going to look in verses 10 and 11. Genesis chapter 12, verses 10 and 11. Here's what it says. Now there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down to Egypt to dwell there, for the famine was severe in the land. And it came to pass when he was close to entering Egypt, he said to Sarah his wife, "Indeed, I know that you are a woman of beautiful countenance." A woman of beautiful countenance. Let's go to 1 Samuel chapter 9. 1 Samuel chapter 9, let's look in verses 1 and 2. 1 Samuel 9, verses 1 and 2. There was a man of Benjamin, whose name was Kish, the son of Abiel, the son of Zeror, the son of Becherath, the son of Aphiah, a Benjamite, a mighty man of power. And he had a choice and handsome son whose name was Saul. There was not a more handsome person than he among the children of Israel. From his shoulders upward, he was taller than any of the people. Let's go to 1 Samuel chapter 25. 1 Samuel chapter 25. We don't know much about this lady. She just kind of appears. There's a little bit of narrative, and then she's gone. 1 Samuel chapter 25 and verses 2 and 3. Now there was a man in Maon whose business was in Carmel. The man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats, and he was shearing sheep in Carmel. The name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife, Abigail. She was a woman of good understanding and beautiful appearance. One more. Let's go to 2 Samuel chapter 14 and verse 25. 2 Samuel chapter 14 and verse 25. This is one of the sons of David. Just one more. Absalom. Now in all Israel there was no one who was praised as much as Absalom for his good looks. From the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. So the Bible admits, and I didn't pick out all of them, just four of them quickly. The Bible admits there were beautiful people. The beauty industry. Do you know how big it is? So for men and women, makeup, skin care, cosmetic surgery, supplements, clothing, jewelry, diet plans, all of that, fitness. You know how big it is? One segment of the economy, $600 billion. $600 billion. That's a lot of money that we spend on being beautiful. Is it wrong to be beautiful? Well, of course it's not wrong to be beautiful. It is wrong, though, if it becomes a preoccupation, just like everything else that we've talked about tonight and everything that we'll finish up with in just a second. If it becomes something that then takes away your heart from truly what would be good and truly serving what would be good, then yes. I've got to ask the question, does physical appearance matter more to me? It's not that you have to walk completely away from it. Again, Peter, I would just say 1 Peter chapter 3 and verses 3 and 4 that we read earlier. Peter doesn't say don't do that stuff. Just don't let the adornment be all that you're doing. Proverbs chapter 31 is another place to go. Look in Proverbs chapter 31. You probably know what I'm going to do with Proverbs chapter 31. Because in Proverbs 31, when you start in verse 10, it's the worthy woman. Proverbs 31, and you start in verse 10, and you begin down through there. Who can find a virtuous woman? Her worth is far above rubies. And then it begins giving all of these attributes. And none of them really have anything to do with beauty. You know, beauty's cool. It's pretty neat. But what's the most important? Actually, look what it says down in verse 30. Just glance down to verse 30. It says, charm is deceitful and beauty is passing. Some versions say it's fading. But a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. A woman who fears the Lord. Now think back to Absalom, the son of David. Absalom was an individual who, from physical appearance, there was no one who was great, you know, no one more handsome. Son of David. 1 Samuel chapter 16. Do you remember the description of David? It was unremarkable. It describes him to having this ruddy appearance. It was unremarkable. But do you remember in 1 Samuel chapter 16 verse 7, the kind of heart that he had? He had a heart like God's heart. And in Acts chapter 13, when you look in verse 22, it mentions this again, but it adds something a little bit different. He was not only a man after my own heart, but in chapter 13, verse 22 of Acts, it added that he was going to do my will. He did the will of God. See, that's what's the most important. I'm not saying throw away makeup and I'm not saying stop getting your hair done. And not at all. But just remember, what is the essence? It's having a heart like God's. Am I generous? We're going to take a left turn with this one. So all of this other stuff, people may say, I don't want to get into that. That is just vain. It's just shallow. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to be generous. There were a lot of people of generosity in the Scriptures. You've got the widow of Zarephath. The widow of Zarephath was willing to give Elijah, I mean, the very last stuff that she had. And Elijah, through God, miraculously saved her. You've got the Shunammite woman, this woman of Shunam with Elisha. Elisha traveled through their little village, and the woman told her husband, we need to build a little room for Elisha so that he can stay here when he travels through. I mean, just good, generous people. And because of that, she was given a son. The son died. Elisha raised the son back to life. A good person. What about Joseph of Arimathea? Matthew chapter 27 actually says he was a rich man. But he goes, he gets the body of Jesus and he puts it in a fresh tomb. There's Tabitha in Acts chapter 9 verse 39. You get such a picture when you read through it that the widows are standing there and they're holding, they're displaying everything that she had done for them. It's just a real touching, touching moment. Or the churches of Macedonia even, which we've read 100 times. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 1 through 5, how they had given, I mean, of themselves, because they'd given themselves to the Lord, they just gave and gave and gave, far beyond what Paul could have anticipated, to help these people. Most of all, I'm generous. You should be generous. You should be generous. But you should do it for the right reason. Matthew chapter 6. Let's go back to Matthew chapter 6. This is, and I'm going to make a case, I'm going to make a statement that this was fundamental. And what I mean by this is fundamental because Jesus puts it in a fundamental spot of his teaching about what is going to define a person who's in the kingdom. So in Matthew chapter 6, and you start in verse 1, it says, take heed that you do not do your charitable deeds before men to be seen by them. Otherwise, you have no reward from your Father in heaven. Therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory from men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But when you do a charitable deed, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, that your charitable deed may be in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will himself reward you openly. Am I doing good for my neighbor? But am I doing good for my neighbor without necessarily other people knowing? Because that becomes an important part of what we do too. Most of them all. Maybe I'm generous. But make sure it's a generosity that's done in the right way. Let's finish this up. Most of all, and here's where we have to end. Most of all, I'm created for God's glory. This is the essence that I've kind of been circling around. This is the essence. Let's go to John chapter 15. We're going to read verse 8. John chapter 15, verse 8. John chapter 15, verse 8 is an ambiguous enough statement to where it could be applied to a, a handful of things, but John chapter 15, verse 8, By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit, so you will be my disciples. So the bearing of fruit, again, is vague enough to where there's lots of people who have kind of speculated what different types of bearing fruit will be. Honestly, they're probably all right. They're probably all right. Your life bears fruit. With some people, it might bear multiple types of fruit. With others, it might only bear a couple of kinds of fruit. Nevertheless, when you're changed, when you're transformed, because you come in contact with the power of the gospel, my Father who is in heaven will be glorified. I am created for the glory of God. And in 1 Peter chapter 4, let's just notice it. 1 Peter chapter 4, let's look in verses 10 and 11. 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 10 and 11. As each one has received a gift, minister it to one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. We have all of these talents. More on that in just a second. We have all of these talents, and these talents we use to try to serve and help one another. When we do that, we are stewards of the manifold grace of God. If anyone speaks, let him speak as the oracles of God. If anyone ministers, let him do it as with the ability which God supplies, that in all things God may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom belong the glory and the dominion forever and ever. So everything that you do, we're all made in the image of God. We all have eternity in our hearts. We all have the capability of coming to focus on the essence of being created in the image of God and living up to His glory. So when we minister, that's what we need to do. And I just want to leave you with this. This will be the last thing we look at. Luke chapter 19. Luke chapter 19. This is a similar parable as one that's very, very familiar to you, but we're only looking at it to give you kind of an alternative look at how Jesus presented this. Same concept, two different parables, because it was, I believe, two different points that Jesus was teaching. But Luke chapter 19, beginning in verse 11, "Now as they heard these things, he spoke another parable, because he was near Jerusalem, and because they had thought that the kingdom of God would appear immediately. Therefore, he said, a certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and to return. So he called 10 of his servants, delivered to them 10 manas, and said to them, 'Do business till I come.' But the citizens hated him, sent a delegation after him, saying, 'We will not have this man to reign over us.'" This was just very, very shortly before Jesus would enter Jerusalem. "And so it was that when he returned, having received the kingdom, that he commanded those servants to whom he had given the money to be called to him, that he might know how much every man had gained by trading. Then he said to the first, 'Master, your manah has earned 10 manahs. And he said to him, 'Well done, good servant, because you are faithful in a very little, have authority over 10 cities. The second came, saying, 'Master, your manah has earned 5 manahs. Likewise, he said to him, "You have also over 5 cities. Then another one came, saying, "Master, here is your manah, which I put away in a handkerchief. I feared you, because you're an austere man. You're a severe man. You're demanding. You're demanding. You may very well have worked for a lot of bosses who are demanding. That's what it means. You're a demanding man. You collect what you did not deposit. You reap what you did not sow." And he said to him, "Out of your own mouth I'll judge you, you wicked servant. You knew that I was an austere man, collecting what I did not deposit, reaping what I did not sow. Why then did you not put my money in the bank, that at my coming I might have collected it with interest?" So he says to those who stood by, "Take the manah from him, give it to him who has 10 manahs. But they said to him, "Master, he has 10 manahs. For I say to you, that everyone who has will be given, and from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him." So all this boils down to the fact, it doesn't matter how much you're given. Use what you're given. Develop what you're given. Bear fruit with what you're given. Please and glorify the Master. It's okay to be beautiful. It's okay to be intelligent. It's okay to be wealthy. Just make sure that all of the things that we've talked about doesn't become the core, doesn't become the essence of what you are, because there's only real one right answer. And that is living for the glorification of God. I like the fact, I would have asked Charlie to lead this, but it just escaped me. But close to our invitation song, number 335, Live for Jesus. Live for Jesus, O my brother, His disciple, ever be. Render not to any other what alone the Lord should be. Live for Jesus, live for Jesus. Give Him all thou hast to give. On the cross, the world's Redeemer gave His life that thou mightst live. I mean, it's a wonderful song. And it's a wonderful song. It's a beautiful hymn because the idea of it is really perfect as far as this lesson is concerned. We can be a lot of things, but if you will, we only really need to be one thing. And that is to make sure that we're created for His glory and live accordingly and bear fruit with that. Tonight, we want to invite you, and as Charlie has announced, number 347, is that correct? So we're going to use that in just a moment. So remember that again, we're trying, as we build one another up in Jesus Christ, to be people who are mature, complete, perfect in His sight. And part of doing that is reminders, us talking about, challenging one another. Make what is the most important, what is right in your heart. That's our invitation tonight. It might be that you want to come up and talk to us about this, to know and to understand better, to plead for help in trying to live a good, righteous life. That's good, because that's why we want you to respond. Maybe your response tonight is completely along the lines of you stepping into Jesus Christ for the first time to be His disciple, learning that you live for Jesus. Tonight, if you need to respond to it, please, let's do it while we stand and Charlie leads us.